So my name is Bhaskaran. I'll be talking to you about quantum matters the next about 5 weeks. So welcome to my course, and so it's going to be very interactive. So the first course will be introductory. I'll give some general overview about quantum matter, and then from there we'll slowly develop. I have given some topics. You will find it in that list. So I am very greedy. I want to cover all of them, but I do not know if I can cover it. But if you help me by doing some prayer reading, and if you come up with questions, it would be wonderful to have a interacting session every lecture. That's my plan. So it's an hour lecture. So before I begin my course, it will be nice to have an introduction, very brief introduction, because it's the first time I'm seeing almost all of you except for her. So can you tell me your name and where you are from? Yeah.
I'm Jackie. I'm from Toronto.
From Toronto.
Yes.
So you did your master's and you have joined me.
I did my master's.
Yeah. So you did your, after your master's, you have joined PSI.
After my undergrad,
Okay, yeah, wonderful. So, have you specialized on any topic?
I'm doing a research project in entanglement entropy and holography.
Oh, entanglement entropy and holography. Okay, very good.
Hi, my name is
Okay.
From South Korea.
From? South Korea. South Korea. Which part of South Korea?
Busan.
Busan. I have been there several times. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm interested in quantum information theory in general, and also the implications of holography and quantum correction.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gavit. I'm from Ethiopia.
From?
Ethiopia.
Ethiopia.
My research is in supersymmetric quantum field theories.
Oh, wonderful.
And, yeah.
Thank you.
My name is Sarja. I'm from Turkey. My interests are on strong gravity in general.
From?
Strong gravity, like gravitation.
Strong gravity, okay.
My name is Rokas.
Okay.
I'm from San Diego, California.
Okay.
And my research is in quantum matter on non-Fermi liquids.
Oh, wonderful. So you are also coming up to your undergraduate,
yes.
Right here. Wonderful.
My name is Raquel. I'm from Spain. And I'm for my essay, I'm working in surface operators in N equals 4, so quantum field theories, what I want.
Sorry, please repeat it.
Surface operators in N equals 4 super Young Mean, so
okay.
Supersymmetric
one. Thank you.
My name's James. I'm from Nova Scotia, Canada, and my research is in mathematical physics and supersymmetric quantum field theory.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
I'm Irini. I'm from Greece, and now I'm working on theoretical aspects of classical gravity.
Theoretical aspects of?
Classical gravity.
Cluster gravity, okay.
My name is Cole, from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I don't really have a specialization. I've been doing a lot of quantum algorithms things.
Okay, great.
I'm Vatsalya from India.
From which part of India?
I'm from Lucknow.
Lucknow, okay.
I'm working on twister theory and division algebras.
Okay, so I have to learn a lot of things from you guys. You are all working on very modern topics. Good. Twister theory. Okay.
Shahnawaz, I'm from Bangladesh, and I'm working on relativistic quantum information.
Physics of quantum information.
Relativistic quantum information.
Relativistic quantum information. You want to be fast. Okay. Very nice. I know several friends in Bangladesh. I went them over years. Yeah. Yes.
I'm from Thailand. Yeah, I'm working on machine learning stuff and application.
Which part of Thailand are you from?
I'm from Krabi, the southern of Thailand.
Okay. Yes. I've been to Bangkok a couple of times.
Yeah, it's capital city. Yeah, I live here for undergrad as well in Bangkok. But
so what do you, what is your interest?
I'm interested in machine learning stuff. And
machine learning.
Learning for quantum physics.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm Mary. I'm from the US, from Colorado. And I'm also very interested in machine learning and like machine learning physics.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lorenzo from Italy. I'm a visiting PhD student.
Visiting PhD?
From London, UCL.
And which part of Italy are you from?
Sorry?
Which part of Italy are you from?
Pisa.
Pisa.
Yes. And
I spent nearly 7 years in Italy, but all in Trieste.
Oh.
Centro di Fisica.
Nice.
Integrated. Yeah. But I have been to Pisa once.
Right.
So what is your interest?
I'm working on top table experiment for quantum gravity.
Huh. Like cold atoms.
Sorry?
Like cold atoms, how cold atom condensate.
Yeah, I'm also working right now on some superfluids.
Superfluids, I see.
Like, but yeah, all masses are dependent. Mm. I mean, I'm at the beginning of my research.
So tabletop detection of quantum gravitational waves.
Yeah.
Very
good.
Okay.
I'm Christopher, I'm from Toronto. I'm doing my PhD here as well. And I'm interested in like mathematical physics and quantum gravity.
Wonderful, thank you.
Hi, I'm Anna. My family is from Germany, Austria. And currently I'm working on the intersection of quantum computing with condensed matter and the social impact of quantum technology.
Okay, so Anna, we met last time, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So you know Emily, of course. So I think they know you.
Yes.
So this is what I plan to do. It's kind of from Einstein. Einstein, great Einstein, in fact, he started solid state theory in some sense because he was worried about why the specific heat of solids at low temperature becomes very small, vanishingly small. It's not in agreement with classical theory. So he set up the simplest model possible, namely Einstein oscillators, and began the whole field of solid state physics. Now, in the next lecture, I will just take from Einstein solid and make a small generalization and find out through some collective phenomena, even Majorana fermions can enter in some of these Einstein solids, so-called hydrogen-bonded ferroelectrics. I will explain in detail. Then you are all familiar with Bose-Einstein condensation. It turns out this year, end of this year, will be the 100th anniversary of the famous Bose-Einstein paper. So there is going to be a lot of celebration about it. So superfluidity, helium-4, which I believe is also being used for gravitational wave detection, and wonderful sensitivity, quantum sensitivity. So we will have some look at it. Then we will see Fermi sea of electrons. So most of these things you must have come across in your undergraduate courses. You have even worked out problems. So I will go to some interesting aspects related to modern developments, like Fermi sea of electrons is well known, band theory, tight bending models. Then the notion of Berry phase, I do not know how many of you have come across it in your undergraduate, maybe some of you have. So it's a very important notion which organizes insulators into different topological classes. We'll discuss that in some detail. Then we'll talk about superconductivity, well-known phenomena, BCS theory. Now, you all know that superconductivity is widely talked about because there is a claim that they have reached room temperature superconductivity in some hydrides under pressure. This particular claim of room temperature comes from Ranga Dias from Rochester, who has pressurized hydrogen sulfide with some carbon, and then he claimed that then there was a retraction. Recently, he has claimed lutetium hydride becomes room temperature superconductor. So I will, at some point we can discuss that. Then flux quantization, Josephson qubits. Then it turns out Kitaev introduced a very simple one-dimensional superconductor. He studied a one-dimensional so-called P-wave superconductor. You can think about as superconductivity in the absence of any spin for the electron. So you can imagine a spin polarized electron. So the because of the symmetry, the order parameter will be a P-wave rather than an S-wave. Then he showed that under some condition, the end of this P-wave wire will support so-called zero modes, which are Majorana fermions, very fascinating objects. So we'll discuss. Already we would have touched about it in the first lecture, in the next lecture, then we'll see it again. Then another very important thing is so-called MOT localization, because if you take metal like copper, electrons are freely running around, but if you take an oxide like copper oxygen or nickel oxide, the metal atom is expanded because you have inserted oxygen in between, so there are chemical bondings and so on. And at the end of the day, there are electrons which are localized in some orbitals which find it hard to move around because they are repelled by other electrons. So they tend to get localized just from electron repulsion or electron correlation. That's called MOT localization. Then in the presence of MOT localization, it turns out spins can get entangled and get organized in profound ways, so-called quantum spin liquid, which is a very active field. Even advanced mathematics, like category theory, comes in the classification of this quantum spin liquid. In fact, one of our DBRCs, Zhao Gang, when he pioneered that categorical theory classification. Then we all know topological defects, like in, for example, if you take a crystal, you have line dislocation or screw dislocation. They are all topological defects characterized by Burgers vectors. Then it turns out, in the presence of quantum physics, in the quantum mechanics, very non-trivial topological defects come. You can say topological defects in Hilbert space or in some space, which lead to very non-trivial phenomena. So we'll discuss it from simple examples and then slowly build up. Then it turns out, if you look at the developments in physics, quantum physics, we always make caricatures of reality, because it's very difficult to describe reality with all the full package. So you make approximations, you pick up the key notions and develop. Like Einstein, what did he do? For him, solid was a collection of harmonic oscillators. So imagine each atom is in some self-consistent potential from the neighbor in a solid state. So it's undergoing vibration. So he ignored about everything else. And that already led to very important experimental observation, namely specifically, it becomes exponentially small at low temperatures. So modeling is extremely important, and particularly in the quantum context, models involve truncating Hilbert space and focusing on some low energy Hilbert space like qubits and so on. So many beautiful models which have come in the last several decades. Some of the models, like there is a model called Majumdar-Ghosh model, very simple model. Then in the context of spin liquid, Sachdev and Ye wrote down a model which did not look very appealing at that time. Then came Alex Kiteyev. He wrote down a model which exemplified all the beautiful ideas of quantum spin liquid in a beautiful way, in a friendly, that's why I call them as friendly quantum models. In fact, if you know Pauli matrices and second quantization, that I can explain Kiteyev model and its full solution in 10 minutes. So friendly. Then Kiteyev looked at Sachdev A model, we will discuss at some point, and said that that actually tells something about ADS CFT, the thing that you have heard in the last lecture. So it's supposed to exemplify what's going on there in a very simple way. And he simplified Sachdev A model by replacing the complex fermions by Majorana fermion. And it has become the most famous recent model, the SVK model. So these are all friendly models, because if you look at models, you may have heard about Bethe-Ansatz solvable integrable models. I call them unfriendly models, with all respect for Bethe and others, because algebra is very complicated. It involves lots of computations, and ideas are clear, but algebraically they are very complicated. They are related to very profound mathematics and so on. So Bethe-Ansatz solvable models or integrable models are good, but they are not very friendly in my opinion. Whereas these are all friendly models in the sense I can write down the model and write down the solution, for example, for the ground state in two lines, and then equally profound mathematics follows from that. Okay. Then we'll talk about metallic magnetism like iron, nickel, or chromium, which is an antiferromagnetic spin and charge density wave. Then in the last 30 years or so, in addition to real materials, which is available in nature, like crystals, gemstones and so on. And people synthesize a variety of materials. You must have heard about transition metal, dichalcogenides, 2D materials. Many, many things are being developed. On top of that, and there are overwhelming experimental discoveries that are going on. Every day, if you look at the archive, there are new things happening. Now, on top of that, they have created artificial matter using cold atoms. We will discuss it in one class, so-called optical lattices. You can realize your dear models, for example, you can try to realize Hubbard model in an optical lattice, or Heisenberg spin chain on an optical lattice and so on, or even superconductivity. There are atoms to do that. Then the Rydberg atoms. I'm sure you are, suppose you take a hydrogen atom, the ground state, the size of the hydrogen atom, both of the Bohr radius. But you can imagine exciting the hydrogen atom. And when the principal quantum number becomes larger and larger, the radius of the orbit becomes larger, wave function becomes larger and larger. And then you can do that with like sodium or rubidium. There is one valence electron. You can put it in a very highly excited state so that it is a big one. So, a few hundred angstrom unit. And then they have very beautiful physics can be done using Rydberg atoms. And then there is something called ion traps. You can trap charged ions and look at their quantum dynamics. In fact, beautiful works go on not far from here in IQC, Rizibul Islam and Crystal and others are doing wonderful work. So, if you are interested, I can talk to them and we can have a lab visit. So, this is one of the things that I, then the last thing that if I get time, we always thought that biology involves chemical binding, of course, hydrogen bonds are there. Then quantum mechanics stops there. After that, classical mechanics, reaction rate equations and various processes can explain whatever is going on biology. But nature is very clever. It knew quantum mechanics before Schrodinger knew quantum mechanics, knew it for billions of years. Now, what you find is, slowly, quantum processes are becoming visible in biology. One of our DBRCs, Matthew Fisher, has a very interesting claim which says that nuclear spins are involved in some cognition processes. So, they are like qubits, but how exactly involved and what are the consequences, that's far from it, but it's a very beautiful idea. There are earlier ideas, which is what I will discuss. For example, you know, if you think about vision, our human vision, it's quantum mechanical in the following sense. So, the light falls on rods and cone molecules. There are some organic molecules. They absorb single photon and then change their conformation. So, that triggers a cascade of reactions. So, the beginning of vision is a quantum phenomena. To that extent, in fact, now there is experimental support that our eyes are capable of detecting single photons. I do not know how many of you have heard about it. So, this was speculated by Lorentz many years ago at the beginning of last century that somebody was doing experiments involving vision. So, they asked the candidate to look at the light. So, I keep seeing the light and they make it dimmer and dimmer, reduce the intensity, and abruptly the visibility was lost. Then they reported it to Lorentz and Lorentz said that, yes, the intensity is low, but why should it fall sharply? Then he counted, estimated the number of photons that could be falling at that low intensity. They were the order of 10 or so. So, Lorentz speculated, perhaps we are able to detect single photons. So, now it's almost proved experimentally. So, single photon processes, but we don't make use of, yes.
Oh, when was that process?
Sorry?
When was that?
Lorentz, 1910.
1910.
Yeah, around that time. Then independently, C.V. Raman, because he was doing Raman effect experiments, so you need to do it in dark, because there you need to have a dark room and so on. So, when he went home switching up the lights, he saw some stars in the eyes. So then he also estimated and found that at least only few photons could be leaking. So he also speculated in one of his articles saying that perhaps we are able to detect single photons. So now there are experiments being done in it, on it. And our friend cockroach, we are all familiar with it, right? We chase them away. They live in dark corners, and so they are single photon detectors. So I told my good friends who are willing to buy instruments, please buy cockroaches for single photon detect. So I am fascinated by this phenomena because slowly quantum phenomena are appearing, and things like quantum entanglement seems to be playing a role at this kind in the context of bird navigation. This was a proposal by Klaus Schlüter, my friend who is no more. So he worked on strongly correlated system, later became a computational biologist. So it is known that birds fly over thousands of miles across big oceans, and for example, they fly in the darkness, there is no sunlight to guide them. So what guide them to go in the air? So the only thing that we know is magnetic field. Magnetic field has a direction. But then if you look at the strength of the magnetic field in terms of Zeeman splitting, so it's 1 Gauss is about 1 Kelvin. But we are in thermal environment, warm bed and 300 Kelvin. So Boltzmann factor cannot distinguish spin states because of, you know, almost equal population. So it's here Klaus Schlüter suggested something called radical pair hypothesis. There are 2 electrons in some molecule which are well separated. The singlet triplet splitting is 1 Kelvin. And these spins are hyperfine coupled nuclear spins. Nuclear spins are well known to be very weakly coupled with the environment. So they can maintain quantum coherence over long time scales. So that is a seed of an idea, and which can have profound consequences. So that has also been almost experimentally confirmed. Similarly, smelling, you know, we smell. Luca Turin . So he was at MIT, I don't know where he is now. So they did the following experiment. Smelling, if you look, go to the biology of it, for a particular smell, a particular molecule is involved, a particular molecule is geometrical shape. So it goes and fits like a lock and key into some enzyme. Then that initiates an electron transfer. So some experiment was done in which they found that this molecule doesn't lead to smell if you replace one of the atoms by its isotopes. For example, if you replace all the protons by deuteron, then Luca Turin hypothesis, what is happening is, as it sits, it initiates an electron. That electron is a quantum mechanical tunneling. And you will learn, or you have learned in tunneling, something called phonon-assisted tunneling. There are 2 levels which are not degenerate, which are, there is some, so I want to go from here to here. So if I get the right phonon quanta, I can resonantly tunnel. So it's called phonon-assisted tunneling. So apparently, the phonon-assisted tunneling is going on in this system, and a molecule which has the right shape, once it sits in it, the right mass, so it has the right some optical frequency, which assists the tunneling. But if you replace the atom, some of the atoms by its isotope, then the mass is different, so the frequency is different, so there is no resonant tunneling. As simple as that. In fact, there was a conference on quantum biology about nearly 7-8 years ago. I was participating in it. In fact, Luca Turin and Klaus Schlüter, both of them were there. There was some conformational. So this is also, you know, young people like you should keep an eye on it. Of course, quantum matters in biology is notorious because people extrapolate to consciousness and, you know, mind and so on. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about quantum processes. Very detailed experiments are available. For example, in photosynthesis, when light falls on something called photosynthetic apparatus, they coherently run around over time scales which are longer than that room temperature allows. So there seems to be, they are seem to be guided. So biology seems to be cleverly, even in the room temperature environment, in some sense keeping it cool so that coherence remains there. So it's a completely new field. So these are all the things that I want to, you know. And I will be very happy if you people have already read it, and then if we start the day with the questions, it'll be even better. because I'm the too many talk, because this is like a big course. I'm going to be talking to you only for 15 hours. Already 1 hour is going to be over. So this is the idea. Okay. So if I speak fast or if I'm not clear, please stop me. That's where you are free to stop. Okay, so I'm just repeating matrix quantum. There are all kinds of matters. If you start from the spinons, anions, heavy fermions, bosons, fermions, thin glasses, quantized. So all comes from this. Then this is something that I wanted to emphasize. Development of quantum mechanics came from attempts to understand experimental puzzles and wonders of nature. For example, this is true from Planck's distribution to standard model of elementary particle physics. How did Planck hypothesize? He looked at burning coal and he found that the intensity of the radiation that's coming out as a function of frequency is not obeying classical laws. There are strong deviations at low frequencies. So he hypothesized quanta, energy packet, and then that was the beginning of quantum mechanics. Similarly, if you look at standard model for elementary particle physics, for example, there is a famous parton model by various people, including Feynman. If you take a neutron, it has some substructure. So that came from some high energy scattering, which involves some scaling. It's called Bjorken scaling and so on. So that can be explained only if you assume point-like substructures. So that was a parton model. So many, many of these things were similarly, Einstein began the specific heat of solid. Then ideal Fermi, see, arose from Sommerfeld, because Sommerfeld was very familiar with Bohr's atom model and Pauli principle. He asked the question, how will electronic states will be there in a metal, because they are extended states. So they introduced the notion of Fermi, see, or some occupied pattern in momentum space. And then that explains specific heat immediately and paramagnetic susceptibility and so on. And, okay, we'll come to that. Then lots of activities in the field of condensed matter physics are attempts to understand the bewildering variety of emergent phenomena in experiments in inanimate matter. For example, if you look at Kittel's book, it's a boring book, I agree with you, because it's not a very appealing book, but it's full of facts which are very important and a very easy way to deal with them. Calculations are not very complicated. And I have met Kittel. I'm proud that when I was visiting Berkeley, I made it a point to see him because he used to come once a week. And I had a nice discussion with him. So that was many years ago. Kittel, incidentally, passed away beyond, he lived until 102. So somebody pointed out that those who work on magnetism live longer. Apparently, Hund lived up to 103, and Neville Mott lived up to 98, and so on. So think about magnetism. Okay. Now, as I said, experiments are the ultimate guide in the development of science. So very simple experiments, have opened us the secrets of nature. Calorimetry, specific heat, resistance bridges, magnetic, electric susceptibility measurement, strength of materials, then slowly synchrotron radiation, muon factory and so on, and there are spectroscopy visible. So it's you may be doing ADS CFT, but it's good to be familiar with some of these experimental tools, and because they guide you to new things. For example, this SVK model, which exemplifies black hole thermalization and various issues. There is a proposal by I think Marcel Franz and others that it could be realized in the lab if you have graphene pieces. So if you look at some of the physics of quantum physics of energy levels in a graphene piece with some random boundary condition, the mathematics looks like. So if somebody was familiar with experiments can immediately connect it to. So it's very important to keep, because it can enrich you a lot. So we have lots of spectroscopies. Now, like thanks to electron microscope, now we have scanning tunneling microscope, atomic force microscope, and so on. So optical tweezers, in fact, you can take specially focused lasers, and you can trap molecules, and you can pull them. You can you can take a double helix DNA and then separate them and do all kinds of things. So explore the world of minerals. So there are many, many experiments. So it's good to keep it in mind that experiments are, in fact, I should tell you, very many successful people, if you take quantum matter physics, they have been guided by experiments. If you take John Bodin, he also, you know, many, many experiments, like superconductivity was an experimental phenomenon, puzzling phenomenon. He thought about it. He worried about resistivity of metals in ordinary metals at room temperature, and then he started talking about electron-phonon coupling to understand some of this resistivity behavior, and slowly discovered BCS theory. Similarly, if you look at Phil Anderson, his whole career is always looking at body of experimental results and then putting them together and trying to build simple models. So Anderson has about 7-8 models in his name. So studying experiments are important. I'm just pointing it out. So because nature can reveal its secret, like that's what is happening in biology now. Many, many new experiments are coming. So it is important to understand what's going on locally and how the experiments do what they do. Now, another very important thing is, why do we crave for right and new concepts rather than precise numbers? This is something, in fact, if you take quantum chemistry or many field, they're very much interested in calculating binding energy or some quantity very accurately. But very often in physics, for example, if you take the band theory concept, so at the end of the day, it became very clear that there are bands and band gaps. Then you can remove an electron from the filled valence band, then that's a hole. So hole and electrons are new concepts that revolutionized and led to the discovery of transistor and so on at the beginning of the 1940s. So similarly, if you look at the concept of gauge invariance, which you are all familiar with, it helps in understanding Anderson localization and then in the context of quantum Hall effect. Similarly, concept of linear superposition leads to quantum entanglement, future computers. And also, it's very interesting that we will discuss this at some point. BCS superconductor was represented by so-called BCS wave function, very famous wave function. It had a mysterious phase as an angle which was there. And also, this wave function did not have the short number of electrons, because now we know electrons, you know, cannot be created or annihilated unless you go to very high energies, pair creation and so on. So in a lab, the number of electrons will remain fixed. But BCS wave function, if you look at carefully, it had a quantum fluctuating number in the full volume. So it was number non-conserving state. It was a bold suggestion. So that was appearing in the form of a phase. Then people like Anderson, Josephson and others tried to understand it as deeply as possible. That led to Josephson effect metrology and so on. So very often we look at the body of experimental results and try to extract notions and concepts that are very important. This is one way by which things continue to progress in condensed matter physics. Okay, I have lots of examples. Now, what is fascinating is many of these things connect you immediately to very profound things that, for example, if you look at the knot theory, Jones polynomial, Chern Simons theory, Ed Witten's field winning work, people say it has some beautiful connection to RVB theory, because it's at that time Polyakov talked about statistic transmutation in a spin liquid. And then he set up some framework to calculate some averages in the Chern Simons type of gauge theories. That was further pushed by Ed Witten, and then so conformal symmetry, in which just you have a scale invariance and also conformal invariance, which was discovered in the context of critical phenomena in liquid gas transition and magnets and so on by people like Polyakov and several others, that became the cornerstone of superstring theory, because conformal field theory is at the heart of it. So you see connections across happening in quantum matter. Then this is a very, very old example. So I told you about Pauli, Fermi, Sommerfeld, and the developed theory of metals. And then there was a notion of degeneracy temperature, and then Fermi pressure. And then Chandrasekhar, young Chandrasekhar, he was sitting in Chennai. He apparently listened to a talk by Sommerfeld. He was visiting Chennai and giving lectures about Fermi C and Fermi pressure. And others were thinking about it in the context of sorts. So Chandrasekhar applied it to relativistic situation, and it became famous Chandrasekhar mass limit. So it was a beautiful application of an idea that came from understanding elementary metals like copper and Fermi pressure, applied to an entirely different context, namely stars. When they collapse due to gravity, the gravitational pressure will be opposed by Pauli pressure. So there is no limit to, you know, sky is a limit, you know, kind of applications. Many things are happening in quantum matter. And this is, you know, Kittel's book, as I told you, is a boring book, but every chapter will have some discussion about experimental results and numbers. It's very, very important. So it's, if you are going to become a quantum matter physicist, it's good to be familiar with many of these very basic things, what Kittel discusses. For example, let's take electrical conductivity. If you look at the history of physics, like Fermi C came also partly because people are trying to understand electrical conductivity of metals at low temperature. So now we know you have a Fermi C, and the electrons close to the Fermi C can emit a phonon or absorb a phonon, and that's how conductivity arises in a simple way. So it has a characteristic temperature dependence. Now, so if somebody looks at experimental results, if the temperature has resistivity T goes as T square at low temperature, you can say it's dominated by some electron-electron interaction. Or if T goes T to the power of 4, you can say dominated by electron-phoron interaction, and so on. So when superconductivity in high temperature copper oxides were discovered, it was first pointed out by Philip Anderson that the resistivity was very unusual. It was just linear as a function of temperature way up to 700 Kelvin. So he said that's a problem that we have to solve, not superconductivity. Superconductivity can be explained easily. So even now, there is so much effort to understand origin of linear resistivity in metals. So very simple experiments. Anybody can do it in the lab. You have four probe and measure, and then it's linear. And the coefficients are related to some universal constant like Planck's constant. So the ADS-CFT correspondence and various things are coming in a big way into understanding quantum decoherence in these phenomena. So very simple experimental results. In fact, if you are familiar with Kittel, you can see when Umklapp scattering dominates, you'll have some from. So it was Anderson who recognized him. I remember because it was happening at the beginning. Some experimentalist friends, including Laura Green, they came and presented to Anderson the new results on this cuprate system. So I was sitting there. So Anderson looked at the resistivity. He said, look at it, the resistivity is linear and it extrapolates to zero at low temperature. So superconductivity here. So if you sharply TC is here. So this is resistant. So it's linear, unlike if you take a normal metal, it will be quadratic and so on. So he said that is a puzzle that we have to understand. So nature revealed itself to Anderson through a very simple, humble resistivity measurement. Similarly, thermal conductivity of metals, there are many, many puzzling phenomena. If you go to heavy fermions and many complex materials and new superconductors and so on. So it's good to have an idea about this experimental measurements. Yeah, so there are lots of things. Okay, this already I have told you. Let's see, how am I doing with respect to time? 15 more minutes. So black body radiation, you know, the lower wavelength part, one of the sides was very, very mysterious. So people didn't understand it. Then Planck made this bold hypothesis. And then one of the remarkable thing is an experimental evidence came which got Nobel Prize, like Penzias and from Bell Labs. They were looking at the distant sky and looked at the black body radiation, supposed to be a fit, 3 Kelvin. So microwave radiation is reaching us from around 300,000 years after Big Bang that took place 30 billion years ago. So quantum mechanics has been at work since then. It's a beautiful fit of a Planck's distribution. And then you know the history of, because we are talking about quantum matter, it's good to understand the history. You know, it's all, some people say it's a collective effort unique in human history, because everything was an educated guess. Nobody knew why, like if you ask Bohr why he thought about quantized orbit, he said if I do that it agrees to the experimental results. If you ask Planck why did you think about quanta of energy, he said if I make that assumption it works with the experiment. So that's a lots of hypotheses one after another, and then finally Schrodinger came, and the story was that de Broglie was giving a talk in some seminar and Schrodinger was there in the audience, and de Broglie was talking about matter wave, that is even matters behave like a wave. So de Broglie was sitting in the audience. So de Broglie is supposed to have told if there is a wave there should be a wave equation. So Schrodinger took note of that, and that's the beginning of Schrodinger wave equation. So Heisenberg, so everything is an attempt to understand experimental result, and beautiful imagination, beautiful conjectures, ideas. Then now we have quantum field theory, string theory, and big. So a forerunner of the collective character of modern. If you remove one person, the entire thing will fall down. So everybody is sitting on the shoulders of giants. You know. So it's amazing, unique in human history. In the matter of 50-100 years, we understood this. Okay, this, you know, you know this, you know this. So we are all familiar with, we have bosons, fermions, quantum mechanics, stability of atoms, variety of quantum matters, already we have shown them. Now, this is something, quantum mechanics has grown into a wild forest or garden. Particularly, you know, this comforting thing is, it's so wild, but one can make big marks and make big progress without knowing all aspects of quantum mechanics. Because if you take quantum mechanics, many of my colleagues here, for example, worry about foundational issues. But you know, you don't need to know the why quantum mechanics is the way it is. So enough if you know the rules of the game, matrix multiplications, and tensor products and so on, you can make a lot of, so some amount of working familiarity with the rules of the game can take one a long way. Is something comforting about quantum mechanics, and then you can look back and then why the rules are the way. So a famous statement is shut up and calculate. It's a statement due to Feynman or somebody, but you know, of course, at some point we'll have to think. Okay. So now I think I will. So I wanted to talk about emergence, because this again is at the heart of the quantum matter. The living and non-living material world around and beyond possesses innumerable complexities. Most often the bewildering variety of complexities are incomprehensible. How do we, from atoms, we have human beings and life and so on. Notion of emergent hierarchical help us to get a little hold of them. Surprises await when we transit from classical to quantum world. Experiments, contemplation, modeling, and mathematics continue to help us, okay. So there's a very famous article by P.W. Anderson, which is supposed to have made a very important change in the way people do science. It was written in 1972. He said more is different. I will explain it. So the whole is, of course, people have said it, the whole is more than sum of its parts, Aristotle. It's very obvious in science, literature, art, life, exemplify this. Contents and components differ from situation to situation. The nature of emergence continues to surprise us. That's what makes emergence exciting. I like this simple example because I found this. So A plus A is greater than 2A. I found this example when I was doing my lectures on Meyer pattern. Suppose I take these two set of concentric circles, it's A plus A. I overlay them. Some people say it looks like some butterfly, you know, you can imagine, it depends on your imagination. and then again something happens. Then it looks like a cat, right? Then you can make it meow. So emergence is fascinating, you know, and of course, if you look at periodic patterns with different periodicities, overlay them, you get Meyer patterns, depending on the angle and various parameters, and there is a beautiful mathematics behind it, Meyer mathematics. So already in this curved space, in this, things are very fascinating, things are happening. So I will illustrate it, In fact, historically, there was a discussion between Ernst Mayr and Niels Bohr. Ernst Mayr is a very distinguished evolutionary biologist. The biologists always say that, you know, emergence and hierarchical structure is obvious in biology. We start from atoms, molecules, DNA, proteins, cells, myriad forms of life, neuroscience, self-awareness, and so on. Now, is this unique to biology? Yes. Okay. So there was a discussion between Ernst Mayr and Niels Bohr. Niels Bohr is supposed to have said, okay, let us take a simple case of hydrogen and oxygen. I think I know hydrogen atom well. Okay, Niels Bohr is said, that's fair. So put two hydrogen atoms, you get hydrogen molecule. And put a oxygen, you get water molecule. Then if you put few water molecules together, you get water clusters, then you get what is called hydrogen bonding, quantum tunneling. Then you have more, then you have a drop of water. Then you freeze them, you get ice. Ice is supposed to have 20 forms of different structures of ice. And then more interestingly, when you start flowing water, there is turbulence, which from mathematics point of view, you don't even know how to solve the problem of turbulence. It's one of the most challenging problems because there is a lot of indeterminacy, chaos, and so on. So when you start with one hydrogen and one oxygen molecule, we could never have guessed the emergence of turbulence, for example. So this is just at one level. So one can give lots of examples like this in inanimate matter. In fact, there is a book by Wolowick. I do not know how many of you have. It's called Seeing the Universe in a Droplet of Helium, 3. So you know liquid helium has two isotopes, helium 4 and helium 3. Helium 4 is the superfluid. Helium 3 is a Fermi superfluid. The fermion atoms pair and form a superfluid. And the order parameter is rich. It's not a singlet superconductor, it's a triplet superconductor. So the richness of the order parameter lead to effective theories at low energies, which looks like quantum gravity and various phenomena that happens in high energy physics and appear there. There is a mirror image of that. So that's why Wolowick calls that book as Seeing the Universe in a Droplet of Helium. Very profound concept. Chern-Simmons theory comes there and quantum number fractionization. But of course, the parameters will be different. Instead of velocity of light, you will have some sound velocity. So mathematically, there is similarity. So I will illustrate with one simple example, which I like, and then conclude today's talk. So this is the famous article by Anderson. I encourage you to look at it because, for example, Anderson says, he tries to organize it in terms of notion of broken symmetry and hierarchical structures. Then he says that at every level of complexity, entirely new properties appear, which one could not have guessed before. So this is one of the, you know, key things in quantum matter. I will give one example later. So like if you start from elementary particle physics, it's not obvious that solid state physics will emerge. And if you start from many body physics, it's not obvious how chemistry will emerge, and so on. So many things happening, things are happening. Okay. So there are, so for example, if we take just carbon atom alone, or just atoms, you have diamond lattice, you have graphene lattice, you have lanthanum copper oxide, which becomes high temperature superconductors. Then if you go to biology, you have this, you know, big protein molecules, and then there are nucleic acids, they bond in some way, polymers, amino acids, nucleic acids, proteins, DNA, and so on. And again, if you keep going from Pauli principle, you get spontaneous symmetry breaking. in strongly correlated fumigate, Martin insulator, Condo insulators, many, many notions. And they continue emergent gauge fields and so on. Yeah, again, many, many things. Yeah. This is something I wanted because many of you are doing mathematical physics and so on. So the world web of science and unexpected connections from, as I already told you, Chandrasekhar connected the white dwarfs emergence and so on using Fermi C Pauli pressure working against gravitational collapse. Then superfluidity of helium 3 was invoked to understand neutron stars. There is supposed to be a crust of superfluid and there are supposed to be vertices. So, their star quakes are related to the glitches that you see in the pulsar period is related to so-called vortex quakes or star quakes. It has been, you know, beautifully done by many people. And similarly, Anderson discovered in the context of superconductor a phenomena by which a collective mode gets gapped, becomes a plasmon. And then that led to emergence of Higgs particle. It gave idea to Peter Higgs and others that elementary particle mass could come from similar mechanism. So, very often it is called Anderson-Higgs mechanism. So, now you can see such SVK model throws light on black hole physics. Now, this is something I, you know, if you are interested, you can note down this reference. I was very fascinated when I heard this talk by my friend Joseph Samuel from Raman Research Institute at Bangalore. He, Suparnasingha and Shivam, they have written a paper. What they do is, they take, if you take a just single qubit, the Hilbert space is supposed to be a Bloch sphere. So, the north pole supposed to corresponds to upspin and south pole corresponds to downspin. And any linear combination will be one of the points. But if you take two qubits, you have a direct product of these two. It's supposed to be four-dimensional complex Hilbert space. What they find is, if they want to separate the states, pure states in this Hilbert space into entangled and direct product states, non-entangled states, the shape of the boundary and so on are connected to some mathematics that comes from general theory of relativity. There is no relativity here, just a two-qubit Hilbert space, but the mathematics becomes completely, they have used even some theorem from general theory of relativity to understand what is going on in this situation. So, this is a fantastic idea of emergence, how just two-qubit Hilbert space takes you to unexpected corner in the world of physics mathematically. So, let me, this is a general talk, sorry, going in the wrong direction. So, if you take bosons, many things like that happens. Carbon, so I will just explain, suppose you take carbon atom alone, carbon atom forms diamond, which is well known. Then also it forms graphite, then also forms fullerene, and also it forms nanotube. Variety of things, it's all happened in the last 30, 40 years, all these experiments developed. There are a few Nobel Prizes already hiding behind. And these guys, Geim and they got Nobel Prize just for peeling single layer of graphene and finding wonderful experimental results in terms of simple conductivity and so on. And the graphene basic, we'll discuss it later, is something you have sp3 bonding, you have one lone electron in the 2p orbital and they form a tight bending band. Now, let me spend some time, this is what I wanted to. Now, I wrote about this in one of my review articles. So, we will talk about just carbon, like the way Wolowick looked at helium-3 and connected to, you know, the whole quantum gravity and so on. So, let's take carbon atom and find out how emergence occurs or quantum complexity. As you know, carbon atom has two electrons in the 1s shell and two electrons in the 2s shell and two electrons in the 2p shell. Okay. Now, because of that and because of the degeneracy of the 2s and 2p levels and so on, it has a propensity to form sp3 bond, which is a diamond world. So, we will not talk about it. Then it has a propensity to form a mixture of sp2 and sp3 bond. That's connected with carbon nanotube and buckyballs and so on. We'll not talk about it. Let's take just sp2 bond alone, which is the world of graphene, or if you have stack of them, it's called graphite. Now you notice just from these two how, as you come down or go up in the hierarchy, many, many beautiful notions which are very profound, you know, were discovered independently in their own right, appear in the simple looking carbon system. So you have a sigma bond which leads to honeycomb structure. Then because you have a honeycomb structure and you have p z orbital, there is a pi bond. And the pi bonds lead to what is called pi and pi star bonds. And then if you look at the band structure, you get what is called Dirac cones, which means the low energy physics of electrons and holes in graphene look like Dirac theory, massless Dirac theory in 2 plus 1 dimension with all consequences. So massless Dirac theory in 2 plus 1 dimension, of course, the velocity of light is replaced by Fermi velocity. Okay. Then if you take this material and look at the, is there any lecture afterwards? Emily, is it, sorry?
At 11:30.
There is a talk. Okay, I will finish it quick. So if you look at the edges of this graphene, there is magnetism. Nobody would have suspected, but experimentally seen and theoretically proved, experimentally also proved. Then if you look at the nature of block wave functions, we will talk about, there is a topology there in terms of pseudo spin, beautiful topology. And then there is a notion of anti-localization. And then if you come down, it was shown by various people, there is something called a parity anomaly, which leads to what is called spin Hall effect. Then if you come down, you can have what is called two-channel Conde effect, when you put a magnetic impurity, which exemplifies the presence of Majorana fermion. Then it was shown by people that if you have defects in this system, they behave like a gauge field. The mathematics looks like as if there is an emergent local gauge field. Then this is a fascinating thing. When you do quantum field theory of Dirac electrons, and you know, you find so-called Zitter Bogogong, that is a shaky behavior of high energy particle in space-time. So because this problem looks like massless Dirac fermion, there is an analog Zitter Bogogong. In fact, that has been even experimentally seen. So instead of going to LHC and huge accelerator and accelerating particle to very high velocities, you can realize them in the lab. So Zitter Bogogong. And then with a colleague of mine, two friends, Shankar and Vinu Lukos, we did some work. So if it looks like relativistic theory, can we go little beyond? So what we found was, we take this problem and apply electric and magnetic field, and then do some Lorentz boost. And then what you find is, you can realize the analog of Lorentz contraction, time dilation, and vacuum collapse in this problem on the lab. There is an analog, not exactly identical to that, because the mathematics is similar. So this part of it has been even experimentally confirmed. So and so on. So what you find is, from simple carbon atom, the fact that it has sp electrons which are nearly degenerate leads to emergence which is so fascinating. This is just one corner. You can, similarly, you can go on the diamond corner, you can go into the carbon nanotube and the buckyball direction. So this is what quantum matter is. It is a Hilbert space that comes out is extremely rich, incomprehensibly rich. So that's what quantum matter is. You know, we are dealing with it. So hopefully we'll have some glimpse of this rich variety in the next 13, 14 lectures. So I'll be happy to answer if you have any questions now. It's a very general lecture, but I wanted to give you some feeling for, yes.
Very simple question. The reason why it's called hard and soft matter is just because the hard matter is inspired by crystals and stuff like this, or just the terminology hard and soft, where did that come from?
So, okay. Soft matter is literally soft in this, in biological material, water, gels, and so on. But it doesn't mean there is no quantum mechanics there. For example, the quantum processes that I talked about are happening inside a soft matter. So part of soft matter can act like a quantum matter. Like, you know, if you take a DNA, So the examples I was telling about radical pair and so on, it's happening in some big molecules in the enzyme. It also, it's well known in enzymes, electron tunneling over long distance, surprisingly long distance takes place. So it's a quantum matter in that sense. So similarly, in some DNA, again, long distance electron transport, various surprising things happen. That's again a quantum phenomena. So, biological materials are in general soft materials, except for bones and so on. But if you come to bone also, there is a lot of solid state physics and quantum physics there. So, the separation into soft and is a convenient way of separating it. But processes at level of molecules and atoms, there are very fascinating things. So, most of the thing that we talk about in the context of quantum matter in models and so on, they occur in periodic systems, like all these models that I'm talking about. But in non-periodic systems, like biological system, there is no reason it should not be there. So, soft matter and, you know, soft matter is known its richness without quantum mechanics, pattern formation, and, you know, variety of things, Nobel Prizes and so on. So, we are exploring the richness that comes from Hilbert space. Like, as I said, even 2-qubit Hilbert space is so rich compared to 1-qubit Hilbert space. Imagine 3-qubit and so on, and entanglement, various things are happening. Yeah.
In what sense can there be a vacuum collapse for?
Ah, yeah, very good. So, vacuum collapse. So, for example, Kaluza and Klein, you know, pointed out that if you have a accelerated frame beyond some velocity, there will be a vacuum. Okay, one of the example is, suppose you take a hydrogen atom with a nucleus whose charge is Z. So, if you solve the hydrogen atom from relativistic theory point of view, when the binding energy exceeds mc square, there is a local vacuum collapse. It's well known. That's called some 1 over 137, and Z is greater than 1 over 137 or 137, there is a spontaneous particle hole production. So that thing happens here also. The Landau levels in the presence of electric and magnetic field collapse, and then there is a spontaneous creation. I refer you to that. I can tell you in detail about it. But, you know, the vacuum collapse happening in the lab. So, this has a complete meaning in terms of dielectric breakdown. So, something breaks down, but it can be mathematically viewed as a vacuum collapse, Kaluza-Klein collapse. So, okay, if there are no more questions, thank you. So, we'll meet tomorrow, right? No. Wednesday at the same time. So, please read about solids and hydrogen bonded materials. If you have any questions, and that's what I will build on. I will go from Einstein solid to Majorana fermion. Things like Jordan-Wigner transformations and so on. You are all familiar with it, but just refresh your memory. Thank you.